welcome to the November 5th edition of Juno Afternoon right here on KTOO. We've got a great show. We're talking about music, photography, art. It's First Friday tomorrow. It's all here. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada has a new prime minister. A swearing-in ceremony was held Wednesday, and as Dan Karpinchuk reports, the new government includes First Nations people.
There were no limousines dropping off the prime minister-designate in his cabinet. They took a bus, then walked together along the drive to the governor general's residence for the swearing-in.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, Queen of Canada, her heirs and successors. So help me God.
And then his cabinet was sworn in, 30 members, half of them women, and at least two of them Aboriginal people, such as Jody Wilson-Raybould, as the Minister of Justice. Wilson-Raybould is a former regional First Nations chief from British Columbia.
I will truly and faithfully, and to the best of my skill and knowledge, execute the powers and trust reposed in me as the Minister of Justice and the Attorney General of Canada.
Trudeau's Liberal Party elected 10 Native people to the Canadian Parliament, after an unprecedented turnout from First Nations people across the country. Another cabinet post goes to Hunter Tutu, an Inuk from Nunavut. He gets the fisheries and oceans portfolio. Many Native leaders are hopeful, yet skeptical, that even with that many Aboriginal members of Parliament, real change can be effected in Ottawa. Some Native analysts say Liberal governments in the past brought in policies for Native people that were considered by some to be regressive. Still, many are pleased with the new dialogue coming from the new Prime Minister, what they see as the start of a nation-to-nation relationship. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Tribal leaders from across the U.S. are meeting with President Obama and his cabinet today in Washington, D.C. to discuss priorities including health, safety, and energy. Officials say efforts are underway to ensure progress made in Indian Country continues after the administration leaves office. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell.
A big part of this conference is to discuss how we make these gains permanent, and what is the role for tribal leaders in making sure that happens, and what are we doing to do it, and what are their suggestions to us?
Jewell says one thing that has been set in place is the White House Council on Native American Affairs, created by executive order. It will continue until a future president stops it. Jewell adds there's also bipartisan support in Congress for some Indian issues, including education, which she says can help tribes during the next administration. A tribal climate change working group is meeting this week. Reporter Chuck Kornbach has more.
The Indigenous Peoples Climate Change Working Group aims to educate students at tribal colleges and universities about climate change. The group also works to ensure that tribal knowledge of landscapes and climates is valued and used in research. Professor Daniel Wildcat of Haskell Indian Nations University is a member of the Muscogee Nation and is one of the leaders of the working group. Wildcat says more frequent or powerful storm surges, hurricanes, and other extreme weather events in the Gulf of Mexico that scientists say may be linked to global warming are the main reason the group chose to have this week's meeting in New Orleans.
We're keenly aware of the really crisis, the imminent crisis that those tribes on the Gulf Coast are facing right now. And we wanted to kind of come to their backyard while they still have one, because some of them are really examining how they might remain, what would that look like, and some are contemplating removal.
Wildcat says in both Native and non-Native communities, the people's success in rebuilding after major storms often depends on their local economic resources or their ability to obtain federal help. He also says people are often harmed by more subtle changes from storms, like increased soil erosion and water contamination that kills fish. I'm Chuck Kornbach.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support provided by Shoshone-Bannock Tribal Farms, proud producer of free-range, sustainable buffalo jerky, holiday delivery of original, peppered, and teriyaki buffalo jerky available on orders placed by December 15th. More information at sbtribalfarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 5 minutes past, 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm your Thursday host, Joan Partis. And as far as the weather, we're going to have a strong wind starting at 9 p.m. this evening going through Friday. And it's colder. It's highs 33 to 43 tonight. Windy, rain, lows 37. Friday rain, highs around 43. And they're looking at some snow for next week. So that could be some exciting for some and not so exciting for others. As far as what's up here in the studio, our first guest is Representative Tataku Winds. Our second guest is Larissa Manuel. She has a beautiful photographic book of photography called Southeast Alaska, a Photographic Passage. That's right in front of me. Then Brandon Howard, a fabulous potist, will be here from the canvas to talk about that. And then we'll end with Nancy Ciccioni and Arts Up. And, of course, we'll have Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and much more. But let's get the show going. Welcome to the show. It is Sarah McNair Grove here, the president of the Juno Community Bands. Hi, Sarah.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Nice to meet you. So let's start at the very beginning. It's the Tataku Winds are having a concert Saturday night at the Jack.
Correct.
But they're part of Juno Community Bands. And this is the first time I've heard of Juno Community Bands. So educate me. Tell me a little bit about the evolution.
Juno Community Bands is an organization that plays band music. And most people in Juno probably would recognize us from the 4th of July marching band. That started about 40 years ago and has been in every 4th of July band since then. And about 6 or 7 years ago, a group of adult musicians said, we would like to play more than just the 4th of July. So we put together a concert band, and we have gone by Juno Concert Band. And a year ago, we decided let's have a catchier name, so we call ourselves Tataku Winds.
And then you're playing in October, and there's a big wind advisory going on.
That's right. I was thought of that when you said the weather.
So when I think about the marching band for July 4th, I think of a lot of people. How many people are in this Tataku Winds band?
Tataku Winds has about 30 to 35 players, and we are a wind band, so that's clarinets and oboes and flutes and trumpets and trombones and percussion, tubas, those kinds of instruments.
So when you say something like that, I think of a certain type of composer that I think you have some news about. So you want to talk about that?
Yes. One of the pieces that we're playing is by John Philip Sousa, which I think most people are familiar with, and most people will recognize his Stars and Stripes, and we play that every year in the parade. But we came across a piece that he wrote and was never performed in his lifetime. And it was partly not performed because all the parts of it weren't there. And his daughters were cleaning up his music after his death and discovered the stack of music that didn't have a part to it. Well, you'll have to come to the concert to hear the whole story, but the pieces were actually finally put together in about 1980, in the mid-1980s. So it was performed, Sousa died in about 32, so about 50 years after his death, this piece had its first performance, and we're really excited to be able to have that on our concert.
That sounds great. So it's Tataku Winds. It's their fall gala concert. It's this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at the Jack. Lots of musicians. Somewhat recently discovered in the music world.
Yes, uh-huh.
John Philip Sousa piece. And what else can people expect?
We actually have another piece that has sort of that same history by Ray Fawn Williams, who is a very well-known English composer. He does a lot with folk music of England. And one of the opening pieces on the concert is called Flourish for Wind Band. And this was also one that was played, you know, after it was written and then lost for many years and not discovered until 1970s. And it's been played in very often since then. But it was also one of these that was kind of got lost and then was found again. So that's kind of the beginning and the end of the concert have that in common.
That sounds great. Yeah. So I'm going to show my ignorance here.
Sure.
So I'm going to assume that the difference between a wind band and a symphony is strings.
Strings. A wind band does not have strings in it.
Okay.
That's correct.
And do many of your band members also play in the symphony?
Yes, actually quite a few of the symphony wind and brass players do play in taku wind. So if you go to the symphony, if you come to our concert on Saturday night, you'll see many, many familiar faces. And I guess I do have to take that back. We do have one string player. We have a string bass player.
Okay.
So you will frequently see that, but you won't see violins and you won't see cellos and that kind of thing.
Okay. And that dictates the type of music that will be played.
Correct.
Okay. And anything you want to tell us about stuff that's coming up for the Juno Community Bands or how people could, besides this concert Saturday night, just things that are on the horizon?
Okay. We usually play two concerts a year, one in the fall and one in the spring. And this year we are doing something in addition to those two. We're having a chamber music concert. So in January, I think it's January 9th, actually in the KTOO 360 studio, we're having a chamber music concert, which is small ensembles of players from Taku Winds. So that's coming up. I think it'll be an exciting concert. And then our spring concert is going to be April 26th, and we're going to invite dancers from Juno Dance Theater to join us then. So that will be actually kind of fun.
Oh, that sounds great. And how do you pick your music? How does the organization pick
We sort of have rotating directors, and this time Richard Moore, who is the choir and orchestra teacher at Juno Douglas High School, is conducting. And so it's really what the conductor likes. I mean, we as the board and players make suggestions of things we've heard, but the conductor really is kind of responsible. And it's nice to have different conductors because they like different kinds of music, so that enables us to play a wide variety of music.
Well, they don't call them conductor for nothing, right?
That's right. Yeah.
They kind of conduct the whole show, and you have rotating conductors as opposed to the symphony, who just hired a new one.
That's correct.
Quinn, so that's great. Okay, well, Sarah, thank you so much for coming by. It's 12 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a short break and be back with our next guest.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is at the board. If things are going right, it's because of him. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Hey, the weather, it is 40 at the airport, 41 downtown, and 40 in the Mendenhall Valley. We're supposed to get some strong winds starting at 9 o'clock through Friday. So welcome to fall. The weather's getting a little bit colder, which is a good thing for me at least. So our next guest is Luisa Manuel. She and her father, Ernest Manuel, who lives in Sitka, Luisa now lives in Juneau, just published this beautiful book called Southeast Alaska, A Photograph of Passage. She's going to be at Hearthside tomorrow signing books. Welcome to Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the odyssey of this book. It's thick. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, and we cut it down quite a bit, too.
So talk about working with your dad and how it came about.
Sure. So my dad is a photographer, and I am as well, and he always wanted to do a book all on Southeast. And then ultimately, I worked for Ellen Marine, Alaskan Dream Cruises. They're small liver boards. And I ended up just going to more places and having more of that portfolio. And so at the end of last season, I just called my dad and said, hey, we should do this. You know, you're not getting any younger, and I think we have the work for it.
And would you say it's like half and half as far as, or is it really?
Kind of two-thirds mine, one-third my dad's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you talked about working for Ellen Marine on those small liver boards, so it just turns out that I had flipped to a page here that looks like a Coast Guard rescue. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. That's actually a reenactment. So the only town that truly cares about Alaska Day is Sitka, being the first capital, of course. I was actually just back in Sitka for that. And every year the Coast Guard does this reenactment, or this rescue demonstration, rather. And there's reenactment ceremonies up on Castle Hill. So that shot is the Coast Guard demonstrating a rescue. But luckily, it's not a real rescue.
During Alaska Day?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And so how long have you worked on this book from starting, I don't know about all the photos, but from like idea to publication?
Well, once we knew we were going to do it, it took me about 4 months to put it together solidly, as in a 40-hour work week, just plugging away at it. And in part because I had no experience publishing or laying out a book, so it was a real crash course in that.
Yeah, it is really beautiful. I'm looking at a picture of an owl, and it's in different sections. Let's talk a little bit about the sections.
Sure. So I really analyzed the market in the photography books of Southeast. And one thing I personally found was missing was the cultural component. Or there might be a token shot of, you know, celebration, but not really a lot of focus on culture. So I wanted to make sure to have that in there. And then other areas of interest for myself, like glacial geology, the relics of the past, sea in the sky. You know, we live on the water. And then the Tongass, of course, that encompasses the whole area.
Exactly. So you'll be at Hearthside tomorrow. And let me ask you a couple of questions about the journey. What did you learn?
Oh, wow. You know, I always say I never want to make another book. I feel really proud of it. My dad does, too. But, it you know, it's just so much work. And, it was just a real process, I guess. And, you know, ran into hit a lot of walls. And then eventually it came through, and we're happy with the way it happened. And the execution is exactly what I wanted, so that's good. But
so I'm surprised that you said that did I hear you right, that you don't want to do another book? Because as I look at this, there were some really arresting shots. Do you think maybe in a year you might feel differently?
Well, hit me up in 5 years maybe. But, yeah, I'm sure it'd get a lot easier the next time around.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just the learning curve of self-publishing.
All right. And what brought you to Juneau?
I work at the Canvas.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
As a program assistant there. And you know, I've only lived in Sitka and Southeast. It feels good to be in a little larger pond.
Sounds great.
And you have Thai food.
It is our calling card, I have to say. But let's talk a little bit, too, about your BFA. Where'd you get that?
Sure. I actually graduated from the Art Institute of Boston, but I started at Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara. And the reason I started there, so my dad's a photographer, and we never want to do what our parents do, right? So I did not want to be a photographer. But I fell in love with scuba diving in Sitka in high school. And then I decided I wanted to be an underwater photographer. And so that journey brought me to Santa Barbara. I took all the underwater photography courses I could through Brooks Institute. And then ultimately, I love dabbling in other arts. I decided I wanted to go to a real art school to finish my BFA.
That sounds great. So that was a much bigger pond than Sitka.
Yes.
Boston.
Yes.
And just the idea, like me, we probably have to wrap this up, but just the fact that you fell in love with scuba diving in Sitka must be a story in
itself.
Right.
Well, we have, you know, real wrecks, a giant Pacific octopus, you know, all the different rockfish, very colorful things down there. You just need a flashlight.
Tell me about this octopus.
We have the largest octopus in the world here in Southeast. And so there is a shot of an octopus that my dad actually took, and it flooded his strobe or his flash with one of its arms. But we have the largest in the world. They're pretty incredible.
Okay, I'll tell you, it's always an education hosting Juno Afternoon. I didn't know we were home to the largest octopus, but I'm not sure if I'm ready to put up.
To see that?
Yeah, I'm not there. Ready. Not yeah. ready. I'm sure how far I have to go. How far do you have to go to see an octopus? I mean, how far down do you have to go?
Oh, not that far. You know, I've dove in the channel in Sitka because there's a lot of old china down there, actually. The Coast Guard cutters used to just throw them out. So 20, 30 feet down.
Okay, tell me about the china.
That whole channel. So A&B Harbor, the whole channel of Sitka, just has a lot of hand-blown glass bottles and a lot of old remnants because things were just thrown back into the water.
It's like discovering a whole different world down there, I would imagine. All righty, well, above sea level, here we are with Larissa Manuel, and she and her father, Ernest Manuel, just published this beautiful book, Southeast Alaska, Photographic Passage. What time will you be at Hearthside tomorrow?
It'll be 4:30 to 7.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for
having
me.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 5th of November, 2015. It's the birthday of the man who said it is better to vote for what you want and not get it than to vote for what you don't want and get it. That was Eugene Debs, born in Terre Haute, Indiana, 1855. At the age of 14, went to work on the railroad. He joined the union, became editor of their national magazine, went to prison for support of the Pullman strike of 1894, came out 6 months later, a committed socialist. He was a charismatic speaker, ran for president several times, got 1 million votes in 1912, co-founded the Industrial Workers of the World, the Wobblies. In 1917, he was sent to prison for a speech in which he said, "The rich start the wars, the poor fight them." The Espionage Act had been passed, which made it a crime to publicly oppose the American involvement in World War I. Eugene Debs, who said, "When great changes occur in history, when great principles are involved, as a rule, the majority are wrong." He also said, "Chicago is the product of modern capitalism, and like other great commercial centers, is unfit for human habitation." It's the birthday of the poet Ella Wheeler Wilcox, born Johnstown, Wisconsin, 1850, who is famous for her poem Solitude, which begins, "Laugh and the world laughs with you, weep and you weep alone, for the sad old earth must borrow its mirth, it has trouble enough of its own." And today is Guy Fawkes Day in Britain, celebrating the night in 1605 when a man named Guy Fawkes was arrested. He was guarding a stash of explosives underneath the House of Lords, the gunpowder plot hatched by a group of English Catholics to blow up the Houses of Parliament and assassinate the Protestant king, King James I. Became an annual event, this celebration, with fireworks and bonfires and trick-or-treating, and the burning of effigies. Here's a poem for today by Greg Watson at the Sparkle Laundromat on Rice Street. The teenagers are bored, having nowhere else to go, not wanting to go home to the drab familiarity of housing projects and apartment complexes. We, too, are directionless, but directionless in the same place and time, between jobs, between loves, between ambitions. We are loitering without intent. Hank Williams echoes from a small, dusty speaker. Quarters tumble from the change machine. Pool balls click with soft indifference. The ceiling-high windows are veiled with steam. Impossible to tell at first glance if it is summer or winter, daylight or evening. There is no stampede of years here, no memory rushing in either direction, insistent on its own inherent beauty, only the rhythm of machines in cycle, that constant turning without arrival. We could come back decades from now, pick up where we left off, wait it out for one more song before returning to the world again. At the Sparkle Laundromat on Rice Street, a poem by Greg Watson from All the World at Once, published by Noden Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by TIAA Cref, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA Cref, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Battleground Productions and KTOO are delighted to present the first season of an independent audio series, Brass, the adventures of a family of Victorian science geniuses who return to London only to be confronted with a sinister criminal conspiracy involving many of their old foes as well as several new ones.
As the creature of pistons, cogs, and armored plating lowers its head, Gwendolyn slowly backs towards the wall, anticipating its charge.
You can hear Brass Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on KTOO News.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 26 after the hour. Our next guests are Brandon Howard of The Canvas and John Lyman, who is one of the six artists who are going to be part of the show tomorrow. John is a bamboo rod artist, maker.
Builder.
Okay. Let's start with Brandon, and then we're going to go right to you, John. So, Brandon, what's going on at The Canvas?
Yeah. Hey, John. So, an exhibit that is opening tomorrow that we're really excited about. The title of it is Anadromous, which refers to the fish that we have returning to our stream starting every spring. The anadromous is a biological term, just talks about a fish that starts its life in the freshwater, heads out to the ocean, then comes back to spawn. So we're all really familiar with it. And so it seemed like a great theme for an exhibit at The Canvas because so many artists create so many incredible things around fishing and fish. An exhibit that really kind of displays a sense of place, you know, ties it home here in Juneau. And as you said, we have six different artists who are showing work. We have an artist from The Canvas, Andres Jones. He does these gorgeous fish abstracts in chalk pastel, real vibrant, and they're spectacular. Jessica Hanlon, who's actually going to be showing next month as well, and her watercolors are gorgeous. She's from Juneau, incredible artist. She hasn't shown much here, if at all, but her work is spectacular. Doris Alcorn, who does research with NOAA, she does extremely lifelike illustrations and has actually done a lot of textbooks illustrations. So very, very precise. Then a fellow who does classic, very ornate flies called spey flies. They're beautiful, really spectacular, fancy feathers. And then, of course, John Lyman, who builds these bamboo fly rods. And I approached John several months ago about it because I had heard that he builds these fly rods and that they're spectacular. And I only got to see one in the last week, and I hadn't seen them up until this point. And they are, I can say, what I imagine, they're just perfect. It's incredible to see what a person can build, and they are these perfect items, and they are art. They're beautiful. And so we're setting up an exhibit that kind of shows the step-by-step of his construction of these rods. Along with the exhibit over the next month, we're going to have fly tying classes hosted by Trout Unlimited and the Alaska Fly Fishing Goods in town. We're going to have some, we're organizing with 4-H a kids fly tying class that's going to be free. And we're also going to do a fish printing workshop with Salmon Beyond Borders, which we're really excited about. So we're kind of moving along with the theme of the exhibit, more content, something rich, you know, more than just seeing these beautiful paintings on the wall, kind of delving into it, exploring, learning more.
Like a month long theme over Canvas.
Precisely.
Hands-on, experiential.
Exactly. And part of that, one of the things that I'm most excited about is that John is going to do a hands-on workshop showing people what is involved in building these bamboo fly rods. And I'll let him go more into depth with it. But it's an incredible process.
Brandon just shared a photo, and the rods are beautiful, and they are indeed art. So when did you first start, what was, as a builder, how did this all begin, and
I was the education VP for the Federation of Fly Fishers nationally, and we put on a show for people that wanted to build bamboo rods, and I'd never done it. Well, one of the builders was a fellow named Ralph Moon from the Henry's Fork, an older man, and he invited me into his house one February, and the snow piled up outside, and for 3 days we lived in his library and planed out strips, and he'd hand them back saying, "That one's 2,000 sober, you better do it again." And I got hooked. And that was about 15 years ago, and I've built 75 or so rods now. And it's just something I do, and I'd love to share it with people. So when people are really intent, then I have them into my shop, and I show them how to build a rod. We'll have one of the rods for a guy that did that last winter. Is one of the best first rods I've ever seen. It'll be on display. And that'll be a very similar one as far as the blank and the action to the one we'll be making over the next month at the Canvas.
Wow, that sounds amazing. So we were talking before we went on the air. Let's talk a little bit about how you get the bamboo and also what it's like to work with bamboo.
Bamboo's an amazing material. Its modulus of elasticity is greater than, I don't know, I guess you don't even know what that is. let's see. Graphite's like millions in the modulus. It comes back, snaps back quick. And it's what everybody likes now. Bamboo's old and slow, kind of like I am. And so you got to really stop your action. But what cane will give you is a feel for the fish and for the fly that synthetic materials won't. The reason they stopped making with bamboo was there was an injunction? It was a hold on getting cane out of China during the Chinese Revolution. So everybody ran out. So they had to come up with something else. So they came up with fiberglass and then boron and then graphite. But cane is still, for many fly fishers, the preferred material. It gives you a better connection with nature, with a fish on the end of your line, with everything going on. And if that's what you're after, if you're after what this show is about, the art of fishing, then cane is your material. And it only grows in one place, mountainsides and a little section of China. And you've seen the skyscrapers around the world with bamboo networks on the outside being used for scaffolding. Well, that's all Tonkin cane. It grows from this area, and there's a guy from Seattle that goes over and brings back a truckload of it once a year. And he spends all of his time sorting through this cane. And they say, "What are you doing that for?" He says, "Well, we take this and we use it for fishing poles." Well, in China, they use the tips of the cane. And they go, "You got to catch a really big fish on that thing. It's 2 inches in diameter." Says, no, they split it up, they plane it down, they make these rods, and they sell them for thousands of dollars. Thousands of dollars, you got to catch a lot of fish for that. And he says that in the 10 years he's been doing this, he's never had the heart to tell them about catch and release.
That is fantastic. What a great storyteller. My gosh, that is fantastic.
So that's where we get the cane. And that gets shipped up here, and I got a lifetime supply, and so we just keep making these things.
You get a lifetime supply. That's great.
And we have a a sizable piece of the cane up on display at the canvas. So the display takes you through every step. Something else incredible is that John actually builds the tools that he uses to build the rods. So his connection to the process runs real deep. It's
you can
incredible.
Buy them, but they're really expensive and I'm cheap.
Or just an artist who wants to control the whole process, either one. So if you're just joining us, Brandon Howard of the Canvas is here to talk about First Friday and the month-long activities at the Canvas. And John Lyman, who is a bamboo fly rod builder, is here talking about his process. That sounds great. So it kicks off tomorrow at 4:30?
4:30 tomorrow, yep.
Okay, and six different artists showing a fish-themed art.
Yes, yes.
Practical and
very beautiful.
Practical and beautiful.
Right? Yeah, it's, I think one of the things that I love most about this job is getting to set up exhibits like this. And, you know, we have paintings, things that are real familiar to people as art, but there's so many people in this community who create some of the most beautiful things, and you don't even realize it. You don't even realize what the people around you are capable of and making. And so it's really exciting to get together, see that, and be aware of it and get to appreciate it.
That sounds great. John, so I have a couple questions for you. So as an artist, you had a mentor who taught you how to make a bamboo fly rod 15 years ago, mm-hmm. that you went into his house and he taught you. And this is what you do with people who are interested. If they really have the intent, they come and work with your tools in your shop, I assume.
Yes and no. That's what we've done in the past. There are, as I said, a half a dozen guys that have built with me, and several of them want to start a club.
Ooh.
So it's possible that there's enough interest. It's one of the reasons to do this is to generate it. And if there is, then we might look for a space and pick up a few more essential tools and start some kind of a bamboo rod building club in town.
Okay.
But for now, it's still one-on-one.
And before you built rods, were you building anything else? Were you...
houses. I like to build timber frames. I got another one that I'm building now.
Yeah, I got to go see that, and that was incredible.
Right. The way you're telling the story, I'd like to read your book, The Art and the Bamboo Rod Process.
Oh, no. My book is called Sacred Fish, and it's all about the history of letting fish go.
There you go.
Which actually begins 100 years before Christ. We just don't know it.
And how do you know it?
I spent 5 years researching it.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. Brandon, John, before you go, is there anything else you want to add?
No, that's it. If you're interested in any of the things that we have coming up revolving around the show or otherwise, I mean, we have this show going on, but we also have so many other great events coming up. We've got a drawing class this Saturday with a visiting artist, Karen Luke Fieldace, who the guys at Alaska Robotics are bringing down to Juneau. She's amazing. And you can find all this information on our website. You can sign up for classes on our website, www.canvasarts.org. And we have so many great things going on right now.
That sounds great. Thank you for all you do, Brandon, for the community at the Canvas. And thank you, John. It's been a pleasure meeting you. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. That's the call of a downy woodpecker. And that's the call of the hairy woodpecker. Downy. Hairy. Got that? Funny thing, though, the downy isn't particularly downy, and the hairy isn't particularly hairy. And they're nearly identical in plumage. The hairy woodpecker's the larger of the two, though, with a distinctly longer bill. And it doesn't have the black spots on its outer tail feathers like the downy. It's the downy you'll see most often at suburban feeders, especially in deciduous woodland. Small, black and white, the male sporting a vivid red patch on the back of its head. His hairy cousin prefers hanging out in coniferous woods. But even if you don't see them, you can still tell them apart by those calls. Remember, soft and downy, like a duvet. Loud and hairy, like a heavy metal band. Get BirdNote whenever you want when you sign up for our podcast at birdnote.org. Today's show was brought to you thanks to generous support from the Bobolink Foundation. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
I feel good. I knew that I would now. I feel good. I knew that I would now. So good. So good. I got a you. I feel nice. Sugar and spice. I feel nice, sugar and spice, so nice, so nice, I got you.
Tune was John Palms, John, and Odin Brody, Frankie Pilafont, Riley Woodford, and Terry Swartz, and more are going to be playing the Saturday night Gold Street Music Concert at Resurrection Lutheran Church, 7:30 p.m. on Saturday. Also on Saturday, the grand opening of the Juneau Public Library, 11:30 to 3:00, out in the valley. Entertainment by the Juneau Pipe Band, Alaska Pella, Heart Strings, Thunder Mountain Strings, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, Tlingit Cultural Language and Literacy Dance Group, and refreshments provided by the Friends of the Juneau Public Libraries and COPA.
Say it's ice cream.
Ice cream for the first 500 attendees. That stage whisper came from Nancy DeCherney. She's here to talk about Arts Up, and yes, it is First Friday tomorrow.
Oh, my gosh, we have a lot to talk about. I hope we have enough time. Sweeney Todd, that opens
tomorrow.
Opens tomorrow. I think there's a showing tonight, perhaps. Might be a pay-as-you-can or something. But Sweeney Todd opens up. It runs through December. I remind you once again, this is a busy month, so don't put off getting your tickets. Just get them, and then you won't wake up on December 8th and go, ugh,
I miss Sweeney Todd in Juneau. Why?
Yes. So, okay. So first Friday, the thing that you want to do is come by the Jack and get your little map, because there's a lot of things going on, and you're going to need a map. So we have in our gallery two stone guys, Luke Hachiopo and Bob Kanitzer. It's a beautiful show. They're in there setting it up right now. Stone sculptures, just gorgeous. So stop in there, check that out. M.K. McNaughton has her new grit portrait up. It's of Gabe Meacham, if you know that young man. And then that will be followed at 7 o'clock by a ballroom dance.
Oh, wow.
Paris, City of Lights. Ooh. So that'll be fun. Over at COPA, speaking of M.K., she has an opening with Southeast Alaska Lighthouses and Aerial Wetlands, oil paints and whatnot. I don't know if they're oils or acrylics. I'm not sure. But she will be over there from 4 to 6 to greet the public and answer questions, stop by to see the new work, and learn about her upcoming classes. She has it's a nice gift idea, you know, to give somebody a gift of some art classes. It would be a great idea. She does art catering.
Oh, it sounds great.
It does.
Like she comes to you and...
and has some art.
Excellent.
At your house.
She sounds like she will have like a never-ending bag. Oh, would you like this? Would you like that? Very I think she actually positive. Teaches art classes in the comfort of your
yes.
home.
Yeah, so it's go meet MK and chat about that and get some ice cream in preparation for your ice cream on Saturday.
At the library.
Yes. Alaska Robotics has Karen Luke Fildes. I looked up her website. Her artwork is amazing. She happens to be the mother of Marion Call, another amazing Juno artist. But she is going to be at Alaska Robotics. She's going to be teaching some life drawing classes at the Canvas on Saturday, November 7th. You can sign up when you're at the Robotics looking at her stuff. I believe her stuff will be up through the month, but she'll only be there on Friday, so stop in.
And then at the Canvas on Saturday, check that out at the Canvas website.
Trickster has Ronnie Fairbanks. He's from Klawock, and again, he'll only be there on Friday, but his artwork will be up through November. They're going to have, in addition, he's a Tlingit Simsion Chippewa artist, and he teaches carving in Craig. He will be... also having, there'll be some refreshments and all sorts of stuff like that, so stop in and visit with them. Annie Kales, while you're on the street, Barbara Lavallee, Alice Tierstig, Jim Hopkins, and Sydney Williamson. Sydney does furniture. She takes furniture and does magical things with it. And Jim is a fossilized ivory artist, and everybody knows Barbara Lavallee. She's got a new print coming out called Family Tree, and Alice is working on a collection of portraits. So that'll be a lovely place to stop in. As we all are knowing, it's starting to get to be that holiday season. And you just talked with Larissa Manawal.
I did.
She'll be doing writing a book signing at Hearthside Books from 4:30 to 7. So let's see. Front Street Community Health Center is having an open house, and they will have artwork by Charles Robacher and Michelle Morrill. It's an opportunity to meet their new medical practitioners there, Cindy Mattoni. I don't know how to say her name. But anyway, stop in there on 4:30 to 7 and find out what's going on at Front Street Community Health Center. That's on Front Street on the second floor. The Alaska Heritage Institute has some great artists lined up. They'll be there from 4:30 till 8. John Hagen, Renee Culp, Selena Beerley, Mary Folletti, and the Eagle Raven Dancers will be performing, and it's all free on First Friday. So stop in if you've not been there yet. It's really an amazing, a beautiful, beautiful facility in our town. GCI has the Hospice and Home Care annual Light Up of Life fundraiser. Stop by and get an ornament to help with that. There's going to be, of course, refreshments. That's the whole point of First Friday, right?
Yeah, you walk around raving.
And just eat. Yes. The Rookery has Chris Miller. He's a photographer. He's been photographing fisheries here and in Brittany, the French coast. So that should be very interesting. Maybe they'll serve some French food. I don't know. So check that out. The Canvas has Anadromous, speaking of fish. They have Doris Alcorn, Steve Cole, Andriana Donahue, Jessica Hanlon, Andres Jones, and John Lyman.
It was just here talking about his bamboo rods. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. They're making fly tying and all that sort of stuff. So there's going to be some things happening at the Canvas, so do stop in up there.
Like always.
The Juneau Douglas City Museum has Communities, Disaster, and Change, plus some ongoing exhibits of disasters at home and the SS Princess Sophia's last voyage. I happened to be there when they were setting up the Communities, Disasters, and Change, which is an exhibit out of Valdez about the Good Friday earthquake. It's amazing what artwork was inspired by that. It's a really wonderful show. So stop in up there. It'll be there through November, and then it'll have to go back to Valdez. I believe we're the last stop for it. Hmm. It's been all over the country, actually.
Sounds interesting.
It is really interesting. The Rainforest Yoga has Yoga of Gratitude with Bev Ingram from 5:15 to 6:15. So if you've gotten a little stressed out from all this artwork, you can go have a little break in the action there. The Juneau Artist Gallery, Mark Vincel and Diane Anderson will be featured. They were one of the 8 or 9 artists that spent various amounts of time out at the Greening Cabin, which is sort of an interesting new thing that's happening, and they will be featuring some of their artwork that they did while they were out there. I know Pua Manu was out there, and Constance Baltoc, and I don't remember who all, but it was a really nice show opportunity for artists.
Huh. Where is it?
The Greening Park is out in Amalga Harbor.
Oh, nice.
In that neighborhood. Kindred Post, Christy Nami is releasing some new Growing Upwards, and there will be a photo booth by Darren Donahue at Kindred Post. I think there will be music by Tom Loker and Erica Lee and Dara Rialtos. Anyway, singing. There will be singing.
At Kindred Post.
Yes, go there. The Alaskan Brewing Depot is releasing their smoked porter, and they'll have live music by Soul Review. You have to be 21 to go there. Sorry. Fairweather Weather Gallery has a store-wide sale, and the Oak Gallery has Leslie Wagner of Sitka Spruce Design. They are also in the Senate building. So you've got a lot of stuff to do. Okay, so you were done with that. Done. You've seen all of those things. So now you're going to go ballroom dancing. And then you're going to go out to possibly Pauly Shore Live at Suite 907 or possibly McGivney's, where they also have live music. So it's a full evening on Friday. But you have to rise up early in the morning on Saturday because it's the ski swap.
Oh, the ski swap. That right. is important.
That is important. I think people queue up for that. So there's that. There's from 10:30 to 12, there's a coffee and collections thing at the museum about the disaster cycle, a panel presentation. The Zippity Doodah Family Concert, annual event for the fundraiser for the preschool at 11 at Northern Light Church. As you mentioned, the Mendenhall Library opening from 11:30 to 3 with Copa Ice Cream for the first 500 people. If you miss out on that, there's a Lions Club barbecue from 12 to 5 at McGivney's, and it's a fundraiser that the Lions Club does for diabetes, I believe, so you can go have some barbecue. The Climate Action Movie Series is going on at 7 p.m. There's Retail Therapy, a fashion show fundraiser for Jammy at Suite 907. Taku Wins concert is happening at 7:30 at the Jack. The Snowvember Film Series at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. Live music out at McGivney's at 10 p.m. I feel like we're missing something.
Well, I have a question. What about this Climate Action film?
There's a series of them. This changes everything. Oh, there it comes.
Vanity's right, and this is over at the Gold Town,
yeah,
right?
There's several of them that are coming.
Right, so it looks like Saturday, 4:30, Sunday. You could go check it out at the Gold Town, and this is brought to you by the Alaska Climate Action.
Mm-hmm. So all week or all month this month at Gold Town, there's some really interesting things going on. Juno Lyric Opera is doing a series of movies. I think they're doing Rent this month, although I don't see that on my list. So I might be making that up.
Mm-hmm.
But Gold Town, as if we didn't have enough to do. Gold Town has got this climate series. It's got the Lyric Opera series and some other really wonderful films. So check out their website to get the full schedule. On Sunday, there's a pickup Ultimate Frisbee out at Thunder Mountain.
Real fun.
Yeah, and Sweeney Todd is at 4:30. And the Juno Cabaret is performing at the Rockwell Ballroom at 7 p.m. on Sunday. So go there.
Really?
Yeah. And some really wonderful people singing. Some new talent in town,
so
too, which is very
fun. So is this the Juno Cabaret?
Tom Loker sort of coordinates it with Laura Haywood, and it's just local people having a great time singing, and you too could sing. If you
don't worry, Juno, I won't do it.
Why not?
Let's see. There's a few other things. Planetarium on Tuesday from 6:30 to 7:30 is having a presentation called Black Holes Have No Hair. So there. And also at 7 p.m., it's Mudrooms. The topic is shenanigans. They are at the Northern Light Church, and it's $7 to get in. You get 7 minutes to talk. I think you have to sign up ahead of time for that.
Right, but they already have their speakers.
Yeah,
is that Wednesday or Tuesday?
That's Tuesday is what I have on my calendar.
Okay.
So, and on Wednesday, there is a fly rod building demo at the Canvas.
Oh, man, with John Lyman. That's
yeah. It seems like good. And then there's the ski film bar night at Louise and Sweeney Todd and Frisbee. So, you know, I just have to say, good on you, Juno.
And good on you, Nancy.
There's a lot going on, and I'm thinking we're going to keep ourselves busy and out of trouble for the holidays.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming by. And then just also the Big First Friday, like we have tomorrow's Big First Friday, kind of the big push into winter. But then there's the gallery walk
gallery
in December. So that's the first Friday in December.
Yes, correct. And that one is just all hands on deck. So
all hands on deck.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully it'll be nice weather and we'll all be out and having a lovely time.
A little snow would be nice.
Yeah, a little snow, some twinkly lights and such like that.
You know, Bing Crosby, things like that.
And old-fashioned, whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, this is the season where things are just beginning to, you know, I remember a visitor saying to me, so we're going to leave pretty soon, it's going to get quiet in town. And I just looked at him and said, you have no clue.
Exactly. There is no quiet in June. Well, thanks for dropping by. I'm going to go right to the weather. All right. Everyone needs to take a nap so they can go do all the things Nancy wants them to do this weekend. So it is 4 minutes to the hour. And once again, we have a strong wind advisory for this evening. It's going to become windy up to 40 miles per hour tonight, 15 miles per hour increasing to 25 with gusts to around 40 miles per hour tonight. Tomorrow, windy, rain showers, highs around 42, 15 to 25 mile per hour winds, gusts to 40 miles per hour in the morning. Tomorrow night, rain showers. Saturday is going to be cloudy, scattered rain showers with winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, highs around 40, and Saturday night, mostly cloudy, dropping down to 36, and then Sunday, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers. But I do see the snow showing up maybe Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. Thank you for sharing your day with Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm your Thursday host, Joan Pardis. Andy Klein hosts Friday, so that's always a party. He's going to be chatting with Ernestine Hayes, a fabulous author who lives here in town. Her book was just picked for the Alaska Reads book, where the whole state reads one book. It's a fantastic book called Blonde Indian. Zippity Doodar Day Concert at the Juno Preschool. People will be here to talk about that and more about First Friday. So join Andy tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Don't be shy, it's just ourselves tonight. Here we go.